Federal Open Market Committee reaffirmed the current 0 to 0.25% target range for the federal funds rate. Since the committee met in July, the pace of job gains has been solid. The unemployment rate has declined, and overall labor market conditions have continued to improve. Inflation, however, has continued to run below our longer-run objective, partly reflecting declines in energy and import prices.
Buckle your seatbelt. It's time for another episode of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, and water filters. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your order at CampingSurvival.com. Today's guest is John Rubino from DollarCollapse.com. John, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Mark. It's good to be back.
Oh,
and, you know, we timed this pretty well. This is a good day to be talking.
Sure. Now, you've recently started your own podcast. You want to tell us about that real quick and tell us also where can we find it?
Yeah, I'm doing a weekly podcast after years and years of avoiding most kinds of audio technology, so I didn't have to learn anything new. I've started doing that. So I'm doing a weekly podcast. They're posted on dollarcollapse.com and a few other places. Financial Survival Network is carrying a link to them. And it's basically me telling you what happened in the last week and the importance of it, and which means there's no shortage of material anymore. This is one of the most eventful times in probably global financial history. So there's always an awful lot to talk about, as you and I will find out today, you know? So the podcast thing is a new venture, but it's so far so good, pretty well received and everything. And I'm looking forward to venturing into video at some point, but for the first year, I'll just learn how audio works.
Yeah, well, I've really, really been enjoying listening to it, and it is. It's really, really informative, and I hope everybody will go check that out. So 2016 is off to a really rough start. Do you think this could be the big one?
Oh, well, you know, when the big one starts, this is what it'll feel like, but there's no way to know because there are so many new things going on in the world. For instance, this was the worst start to the world stock markets ever. To a new year, you know, worst 2 weeks ever. And the world's central banks are watching this with interest. And in times past, they would have cut interest rates a little bit and done a few things, tinkering at the margins with reserve requirements and stuff like that. But now we're in the era of experimentation where they don't tinker. You know, they come in with bazookas, full-scale weaponry and new policies that have never been seen before and certainly never on the scale that they're being tried out. So there's no way to know how the world's central banks respond to what's happening. But I tell you what, a lot is happening. You can almost randomly pick a region of the world and you find a historically dangerous financial crisis happening there, or a military crisis. You know, the Middle East is in flames. And it doesn't look like it's going to get any better anytime soon. And Europe is spinning out of control between the Eurozone's fatal flaws finally coming home to bite the members of the common currency and the Middle Eastern refugee crisis that is sending several million people into Europe all at once. And a lot of those people are behaving really badly, apparently, as we found out on New Year's Eve. So they've got several different kinds of crises of confidence going on there. And taken together, it might be an existential crisis for the Eurozone. And then the U.S., you know, we're seeing our stock market tank to begin with, but a lot of big companies in particular that were supporting the stock market and making it look like it was much better than it actually was are starting to roll over now. You know, Apple just reported that their revenues are going to drop going forward, which for them, you know, that's the quintessential growth stock that went from virtually out of business to the most valuable company that has ever existed in the space of a couple of decades, most of which came towards the end of the process. And now it's rolling over. Its stock is down another 6 or 7% today. It's down 20, 25% on the year. And there doesn't seem to be a bottom in sight, because when a company is this valuable and it's a must-own stock for every single money management operation, you know, the Swiss Central Bank is even a huge owner of Apple shares. Well, that means there are air pockets under that price. And we're finding that out now when we see Apple just gap down. And the reason for that is that I think they're calling it peak iPhone now. You know, everybody in the world has a smartphone. And it turns out the technology is so good that you can get a completely acceptable experience for a fraction of the cost of an iPhone. You know, both my kids did that. They have cheap phones, either an old one that they just pulled out of a drawer or a new one that cost $50 at the AT&T store, and they're completely happy with them. So the market for iPhones, high-end smartphones, isn't nearly as big as people thought it was, because the low-end technology is just so good and it's progressing so quickly. But that means Apple isn't the company that we thought it was. But it's not just Apple, you know? Caterpillar just this morning warned that it's got another nasty year ahead of it after three or four really bad years. And since the commodities complex is still shrinking, the demand for earth-moving equipment, which is what Caterpillar sells, is going to go down for as far as the eye can see. And Boeing is going to sell fewer planes next year than this year. And so suddenly it's not a growth stock anymore. And Bank of America is seeing its stock really get whacked, you know, as people start to question its business model. It's the second biggest bank in the U.S., and it might have an existential crisis on its hands here going forward. So we're seeing a lot of the U.S. stock market start to roll over. And we're such a highly leveraged country that it's not clear that we can handle a 30% drop in the big equity indexes. At the same time that the junk bond market is tanking and the shale oil boom has turned into a bust, and lots of other things are going on. You know, car loans are the new subprime. It just goes on and on. Student loans. We've got a lot of problems. And those problems are in part being masked by capital inflows from places with either even bigger problems. But that doesn't fix anything. That just kind of papers over the immediate crisis. And we still got that crisis out there coming somewhere, and a nasty bear market in equities could be the thing that sets us off. So there's no place in the world that is in good shape right now, and there are no islands of stability. And that's terrifying for the world's central banks, because they've traditionally been able to stop crises in their tracks with easy money. And now it's not clear, since we're coming out of a period of extremely easy money, you know, negative interest rates in some places, zero in other places, and huge amounts of new currency created and tossed into the banking system. And we're tipping over into recession after all that. So what do you do after that? And that's the question that's going to be answered in 2016. And I don't think we're going to like the answer.
And as we're recording this, the Fed just decided that they were going to do nothing, which sent the markets reeling. We've had almost a 300-point drop in the past hour. But these types of market swings are really getting to be sort of normal. January 20th, the market went from down nearly 600 points to down less than 200 in about a three-hour time period. Back in August 24th of 2015, the market had been down 1,000 points and miraculously recovered. Is that normal, or is that thanks to the plunge protection team, do you think?
No, that's normal heading into a financial crisis. In The Money Bubble, the book that James Turk and I co-wrote a couple of years back, we use the example of a spinning top. You know, when you first spin it, it spins really nicely and stably. It just sits there and doesn't move. But as the momentum starts to dissipate a little bit, it starts to wobble, and then it wobbles more, and then it falls and shoots off in a random direction. And that's what you see in the stock market heading into a crisis. You see these huge swings and, you know, volatility spikes, and that's a precursor to a crash. You know, we saw that in 2005, 2006, 2007, where the stock market got more and more volatile until it just fell apart. And this feels like that. I'm not saying that it is necessarily that because of the whole central bank intervention thing. We don't know what the near-term future is going to bring. But left to itself, I think the global financial markets would do a 2008-2009 again, only bigger and more serious and threatening, because we've taken on so much new debt in the time since the 2008-2009 crisis. So I think that's what this volatility is. It's the system beginning to spin out of control and vacillating between, oh, the world is ending, and oh, the central banks are going to save us, you know, and so you get lots of buying and lots of selling, pushing the market in different directions. But the underlying reality is really grim. So the market will resolve, if it's left to itself, with a huge drop. You know, we could see 30 or 40% lopped off the top of most major equity indexes in the next 6 months, if there isn't intervention from the central governments of the world. You know, what happened today, as you said, was the Fed came out, didn't do anything, and the markets tanked. So the markets were clearly hoping for at least some kind words, you know, the Fed talking heads saying, don't worry, though, we've got your back, in different words probably, but similar sentiment. And they didn't get that. So now gold and silver are up strongly, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 267 points right now. And a lot of the big stocks that I mentioned before are tanking today. So in a market where the Fed can speak and the market goes down, that's a big difference. You know, it used to be that every time they spoke, the markets would reflexively spike because they assumed that the Fed was the adult supervision that was coming in to fix everything, make it all better. And now that assumption is no longer here. You know, the Fed is shrinking its balance sheet, which is to say it's pulling cash out of the system, and it's not responding to a couple of bad weeks in the stock market with some big new program. And so these guys, traders who are basically children emotionally, are left without the sense that daddy's going to make it better. And without that, they're getting depressed. And so we're seeing them, or they're getting bipolar, actually. And so we're seeing manic depression in the market. And that won't end until something happens to make stocks so cheap that it's completely rational to buy them, or the governments of the world step in and do something to prop up equity prices.
Do you think the computerized trading, is that amplify the volatility? I mean, how much of this can we blame on R2D2?
Well, yeah, computerized trading and black box trading had spread to the markets, you know, really decades ago. And it's just gotten bigger and bigger with high frequency trading and everything now, where the vast majority of stock trades don't involve a human being. You know, it's just computers trading with computers. And they can spin out of control. You know, we had that flash crash a few years ago where the market went down by 1,000 points in a day, within a day, and then went back up. And that was just computers spinning out of control. So yeah, you could see that. And a lot of the new trading, like high frequency trading, is basically criminal activity to begin with. You know, it's front running, among other things. And this whole spoofing thing where they put fake orders out there to get people to commit, and then they do something that's counter to the interests of the people who they've gotten to commit. You know, that's criminal activity, but they get away with it because the big Wall Street banks basically own the government at this point. And so you combine computers running amok with a lot of what the computers are doing being criminal activity, and you get a market that's really untrustworthy. And that's a problem that hasn't really surfaced yet in any debilitating sense, but that's coming. You know, when people figure out that the game is rigged, they won't want to play the game anymore. And Nicole Foss at Automatic Earth has a great term for that. She calls it the shrinking trust horizon, which is a process where people realize that the big systems aren't working for them anymore, and so they pull back. And they don't trust the big systems anymore, you know, the national government and the regulatory agencies and the big banks. And they pull all the way back to basically their hometown, where they only trust their friends and the politicians that they can look in the eye and talk to, and local banks, and they buy their food locally, and they do everything they can. They move their lives back to this fairly small horizon because that's the only part of the world that they feel like they can trust. And that is also a precursor to a huge financial crisis. And so we're seeing that happen now. People are thinking, geez, you know, Wall Street is bad, aren't they? And the federal government is totally incompetent or crooked. I can't tell which. And so let's just not put our faith in these institutions anymore. And so, yeah, you know, lots of things like this are happening. And you see it kind of happening concurrently. Lots of big systems are heading towards this cliff that they're going to drop off at some point. And so 2016, 2017 is going to be a time when a lot of them do drop off the cliff and possibly pull others with them. So we're heading into a really, really fascinating time, Mark, and not a fun time for most people, unfortunately.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proven to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on gold and silver. Check out silver.com today.
Get prepared before disaster strikes. PrepperRecon.com offers Molly-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, tough strip bandages, and so much more. Kits are available in OD Green, Coyote, Black, and ACU. $99 includes shipping. Go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
And it seems like that the mainstream banksters, I guess we could call them, they're starting to come on board with the perma-optimists like DollarCollapse.com and Prepper Recon. We've now got RBS saying sell everything. You've got Deutsche Bank saying prepare for the perfect economic storm. And UBS is calling for a 30% bear market and $3,300 gold.
Yeah.
These guys are scared as well, right?
Now, you know what this means is that they've positioned themselves to make a profit on that kind of a trade. So the big analysts at the big banks are basically mouthpieces for the traders. And so there's a very good chance that the trading desks of a lot of big banks are now short the stock market. They're hoping it goes down. They are long precious metals. They want them to go up. And so they're allowing it to happen. You know, it wants to happen. The markets want to go that way because we've just screwed them up. You know, we borrowed way too much money. And that's the kind of crisis that you normally get. Well, the central banks are realizing that possibly they can't hope for a bailout anymore. And so they might as well get on board with what's coming. So I think that's really the last nail in the coffin. Well, the second to the last nail. The first one is the U.S. Fed not immediately bailing out the stock market after a 15 or 20% drop. And then you got the big banks saying, well, you know, here we go. It's coming. Prepare for the big one. And who's left at that point to be a voice of optimism? You know, we've got a presidential election in the U.S. where it's conceivable that both major candidates are going to be in favor of breaking up the big banks. And you've got, in Europe, fringe parties, formerly fringe parties, taking power who are anti-euro, anti-austerity, and really not that interested in the welfare of the big banks anymore. And so it's not clear who steps in to save the world. And that's the reality that the big banks are starting to recognize.
And you mentioned precious metals and that they want to go up and that the big banks are positioning themselves for that reality. And while we're on that subject, gold for our Canadian neighbors, it's worked really, really well as a safe haven asset over the past 2 years. The Canadian dollar's lost about 30% of its value since 2014. Do you worry that that type of devaluation will eventually hit the U.S. dollar?
Oh, it has to hit everywhere. You know, the U.S. is the cleanest dirty shirt in the hamper. And so in other words, we have the least obvious troubles. And so that's drawing money from the rest of the world. You know, if you're a Brazilian businessman, you want to get some money out of the country. So what do? You buy a Miami condo. And if you're a Chinese newly minted multimillionaire, you definitely want to get some money out of the country. So you buy something in Vancouver. Or you buy some blue chip equities in the U.S. You know, you do something that that will probably hold its value over time, and you don't care if you make a ton of money on it. You just want the money to be there, more or less, when you need it. And so that's benefiting us right now. But that's also buying us time in which to borrow even more money and screw our financial system up even further so that when the crisis comes, it's going to be that much worse. And so Jim Rickards, who your listeners are probably well aware of, has a thesis that eventually countries are going to realize that they can't keep devaluing their currencies against each other because that's a zero-sum game. You know, it just goes back and forth and nobody ends up winning. But you can all devalue against gold, which is to say you go back to some kind of a commodity-based financial system, preferably with gold at the center, and you make gold worth $10,000 an ounce, let's say. And in that way, you devalue all the world's currencies at once. You have this burst of inflation, but then you go forward with a fairly stable, sustainable financial system. And so you got to bite that bullet and then go forward. And so if you're owning gold when something like that happens and your gold isn't confiscated by the government, you are in great shape. And so Canadians are seeing the early stages of that process play out, where their currency dropped by 30% in the past year. But if they have gold, their net worth actually went up a bit. And if you're a gold miner in Canada, your cost structure got way more favorable all of a sudden. So in a currency crisis, gold is definitely something that you want to own.
And then for you talked about the cost structure for the miners in Canada. Let's talk about the silver miners with the average production cost being above $20 an ounce. How are the primaries able to stay in business with such a low silver price?
Well, a lot of them won't if this keeps up. And some of the ones that are in business now are playing games with their grades, where they're taking the very best ore that they can find and processing that in order to make as much silver at as low cost as possible in order to generate some cash flow to keep themselves afloat. Well, that diminishes the quality of their reserves in the future and makes it a lot harder for them to make money even when silver goes back up. So what's happening in silver is probably that a lot of supply is going to be taken off the market in the next couple of years, because a lot of the big copper mines and iron ore mines that produce silver as a byproduct may close. And certainly a lot of new production won't come online at these prices that would have otherwise. So it'll lower the supply of silver. And at the same time, if you're a silver miner in a country like Canada, your costs are going down. You know, you're selling your product on the global market, getting dollars, U.S. dollars for it, but you're paying your people in Canadian dollars and your fuel costs are way down. And so maybe that $20 an ounce all-in sustaining cost is going to drop to $13 in the year ahead. And maybe that's enough to give you a few profitable quarters before silver's price starts to go up because of the lack of supply. And so that makes you somewhat more attractive because you have a chance of surviving and of making serious money when you got these low costs and silver really spikes, as it will eventually. So there are some silver miners out there that are really, really attractive, and a lot of them that aren't. So you got to be very selective when you start trying to pick up precious metals miners at the very bottom of a cycle like this, because a lot of them won't be around 2 or 3 years from now.
And then you mentioned copper, and as the base metals continue to plummet, that's going to really affect the secondary producers of silver. Is that right? That's what you're talking about, and that's part of what's going to pull silver off of the market?
Yeah, a lot of silver, in fact, possibly the majority of the silver that's produced every year, comes as a byproduct of other kinds of mining. And so if you're a zinc mine and the price of zinc has just cratered, you are going to take production off the market. You know, you might close some of your less attractive properties, and you might even close some of your big mines. And that means that not only are you not producing zinc, but you're not producing silver as a byproduct anymore. And so the supply of silver will go down, but it's a question of how much it'll go down. I'm seeing things now about big drops in the supply of silver and stockpiles of silver and everything, but there's no way to know exactly how this plays out, but the trend will probably be favorable in terms of supply for silver going forward. And then it depends on demand, you know, and the demand for silver coins has been spectacular in the last couple of years. Most of the big mints are operating flat out and they still can't meet the demand. And what that means is that people are worried, and they're getting into precious metals in the only way they can afford to get into it, which is to buy silver coins. You know, so you buy some silver eagles, and you've got recognizable precious metals that will probably hold their value over long periods of time, especially since they're down so big now from a peak of $50 a few years ago to what it is, whatever it is today, $14 and change. So that demand is soaking up whatever extra silver there was out there in the world. And it's going to tighten supplies dramatically when the big mines that are making silver as a byproduct stop doing that.
Hey, Preppers and Patriots. That's the end of the first half of my interview with John Rubino of DollarCollapse.com. Tune in next time for the rest of the show.
Are we living in a time of which there is more prophetic writings than of any period in history? Watch through the eyes of Noah Parker and his family as a global empire takes shape. Ancient writings are fulfilled, and the last days fall upon the once great United States of America. The Days of Noah, Book 1, Conspiracy, by Mark Goodwin, is a fast-paced fiction thriller which looks at how modern conspiracies could play into biblical prophecy concerning end times. Buy The Days of Noah in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition at Amazon.com today.